What we'd really like is that memory foam on our bed. It fits us just right, you know, so that when we get back into bed, it remembers us and just wraps itself around us in such a way that it's just right. Well, I got to tell you something this morning. You had just said something about memory, you know, and shortly after you said that, I kind of glance around, because as a pastor, you have to know who's here, because we know we keep attendance, right? And those kinds of things. And as I glanced around, boy, a memory just hit me. Lynn and Greg Ristalka. Yeah. I promise that I won't do things to people, you know, to highlight them and draw attention to them, but Greg and Lynn Ristalka, you folks are you were part of Medicine Hat many years ago. Where are you living now?
Keniston. We're pastoring a church in Keniston.
Pastoring a church in Keniston, Saskatchewan, right? Yeah. Yeah.
It's the only place where God really dwells. I just thought I'd throw that in.
You thought you'd throw that in. Keniston's the only place where God dwells. So I guess we want to be where God dwells, so we're going to move to Keniston, Saskatchewan.
We are looking forward to that.
Yes, yes, I bet you are.
Can we start this afternoon?
I'm going to give you a list of people that should probably move first. Did I just say that out loud? Oh, okay. You'll take them. I just want to say this, you know, as we were singing these songs, and I glanced around and I saw you guys, immediately certain memories came. And I need to say this morning because it kind of wrecked me for a while during the worship time. You guys ran a youth choir in Medicine Hat back in the day, and I was a teenager going to Temple Baptist Church, and you were at Memorial, I think, back in that day, right? Which became River Park Church, was the church I pastored until we merged these two congregations together. And back in that day, a small group of us met in your home one day because some of us actually were given solos to sing in this event, that this youth choir that was being put on. And I landed one of those little parts. So you were kind of, both of you were coaching us one day in your house. I mean, you probably don't even remember this, I don't know, but we were being coached, and part of that song that I had to sing, I was trying to get a feel for it, and does your life seem hopeless this moment? Have you tried endless ways to escape? Give your life to Jesus, make him Lord of your life. Just believe, and he'll come to your aid. That was the little snapshot I had. And I remember what you guys said to me. I think it was Greg, you said this. Larry, that's a pastoral piece. So think of yourself as a shepherd, as a pastor, singing that over the people. And that was one of those moments where God spoke to me about a calling in life. And you probably don't know that, but there were different things that happened in our lives, right? For each one of us to bring us to the place where we're supposed to be in life and offer our lives to God in whatever fashion. And that was one of those times where I came away from that and I sang that piece in my car. I sang it in the shower. I sang it when I was alone. And every time I did, I pictured myself being a shepherd to a group of God's people. And I know that God began telling me something. So you helped me, in part, to understand my calling. And I thank you for that. Thank you for that. Appreciate that. And we need those memories for whatever God has called us to, because there are times when we want to just... calling? I don't think so. I hear something else calling over here. But listen to what God is calling you to do. Every one of us And so it's just amazing that we see you here this morning. Bless you. Even in Keniston, Saskatchewan. Especially in Keniston, Saskatchewan. That's awesome. Well, this morning, as I mentioned a couple of weeks ago, we're on a bit of a journey over these next few weeks. And as shepherds, as pastors, we've put our heads and our hearts together, and we really believe that there's something that we need to do as a congregation. And in a sense, it's a bit of one of these. Just a bit of one of these in a very good way. Because we're all really busy people. And yet we know with progress in this world, with progress comes other demands. And in our society, we're into progress. We want to see things get better. We want to see things get bigger. We want to see things get stronger. We want to see things get more productive. And progress is good. But there's a dark side to progress. Because the bigger we get, the more we have, the more productive we are. It spins off with more demands. Yes, there's more opportunities, but then there's more demands. Glenn and your wife. I didn't see you guys this morning. A newly retired pastor from Medicine Hat, Church of God. Right? Yes, 13th Avenue. So bless you guys. That's awesome. It's good to see you guys this morning. So what's God up to today? All these spiritual leaders from different places converging. What's going on? Okay. So, where was I? It's your fault, Glenn. So do we still call you Pastor Glenn? Because, you know, like when a president is no longer the president, you still call him the president. It's good to see you. It's good to see you, Glenn Duick. Awesome. You know, with all the extra stuff, I know what it's like. I want convenience. So you know what I did a few winters ago? I bought a snowblower. And because every once in a while we get snow in Medicine Hat. And when it gets deep enough, we have a corner lot. So that means I have at least twice as much, if not more, sidewalk that has to be covered or uncovered. But you know, with that convenience comes more responsibility, because now I've got to check oil on that thing and I got to maintain it. And I've had little flat tires on that thing and I've had to fix them. But at least I've got the convenience of getting out there and blowing snow. And on and on and on it goes. Our possessions, we fill our homes, we fill our garages, we fill our lives with more events, more stuff. And exponentially, now there's more demand on our time. And essentially, where's the margin? There's no more margin. Simon, you mentioned this morning that you had quite a week. An unforeseen thing comes out of left field and boom, becomes part of your reality. Now you have to figure it out emotionally, psychologically, with your work and everything else. It's got to fit into your life. And if there's no margin there to take time to figure these things out, it compounds stress. And it's not a good thing. I've probably told this story before of a friend of mine and myself when we were down in Yellowstone on a motorcycle trip a few years ago, cruising through Yellowstone. We're coming out of Yellowstone Park, going towards West Yellowstone, little community on the edge of the park. And as we're driving into that little town, my friend Bob was on his motorcycle, and I got to the first intersection in town, and he comes roaring up beside me. Just his like, and his throttle is almost wide open, and the engine is just screaming. And he kind of looks at me, and he looks back at his motorcycle, and he has his hand on the clutch, and his right hand, he's trying to fiddle with the throttle control. He's got a cruise control thing on his motorcycle, And it stuck wide open. We had been in the highway. He was enjoying it until we got into town, and the cruise control wouldn't come off. So the engine is just revving high. We're at a red light, and he's fiddling with this. Suddenly, the light turns green, and Bob has it in first gear. He pops the clutch, and the thing just lurches and launches, and he's gone. Get to the next red light. Screeches to his stop. He repeats the same process. He did this 3 red lights in a row. And I'm watching him. I'm bewildered. And so finally, I yelled loud enough over the sound of my own motorcycle and his, and I say, "Hey, Bob, do you think maybe we should turn off the main road and stop so you can fix the throttle?" "Yeah, it's a good idea." So somehow he screeches around the corner and stops. You know, that to me is a picture of how so many of us are going through life. We joke about people who seem like they're going through life with their hair on fire. Just go, go, go. And the more the hair burns, the more they think we got to go faster so it can put it out. But you know what? It's adding oxygen. It's making it burn even more. Fixing a throttle stuck wide open while trying to navigate tourist traffic on the west side of Yellowstone Park doesn't work. Nor does going through life at full throttle and having little glitches come in along the way, and we keep trying to fix the little glitches while still going as fast and as furious as ever. It doesn't work. There's a book, it's been out for a while, it's been updated now. It's an amazing book. If you ever have opportunity, get this book. It's called Margin: Restoring Emotional, Physical, Financial, and Time Reserves to Overloaded Lives by Richard A. Swenson, a fine Christian doctor. Here's what he says: "Rarely a day goes by that I don't pick up some broken pieces of humanity and attempt to put them back together again." He tells a story of a fellow named John who came into his practice. Must have been emergency at the time. Well, it was an emergency. The guy's towel that he was holding over his face was full of blood. And he had been golfing with his buddy. John had been golfing with his buddy. And John, on teeing up, really shanked the ball pretty hard. And it came flying off pretty much sideways and hit John right smack in the face. Sorry, folks, it popped his eyeball out. So he's in a fair bit of pain. And now he's in the hospital. And John had his friend with him because his friend took him there. And his friend was ashen-faced. He was white and he was feeling just horrific about what happened to his buddy John. John was almost hysterical with laughter because he had forgotten to tell his friend that his eyeball is a glass eyeball. True story. And yet he's got lacerations above his eyebrow and things, so he's got to get some stitches and things like that, but he just thought it was hilarious that his buddy almost passed out from seeing his eyeball on the ground. Some of the emergencies aren't so funny, right? And they happen to all of us at some time or another for all kinds of reasons. And this doctor writes that not all broken pieces are so easily repaired. Some people come in for broken legs, others broken hearts. Some have irritable colons, others irritable spouses. Some have bleeding ulcers, others bleeding emotions. And compounding these wounds, many patients show signs of a new disease, marginless living. And that's where we are in North America, marginless living. Our lives are full. Full, 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 full. And that's how we've run churches for so many years. Full, 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 full. As us three pastors were out for a retreat a week and a half ago, one of the things that came up, Pastor Randy was talking about a church he had read about where they were experiencing that extra fullness, over fullness, and people were just stressed and running and doing too many things. And so they made an executive decision. They said, for the next year, we're canceling all of the ministries and all of the programs of this church. Can you imagine that? I love it. I hear people say, yep, yeah, I can imagine that. So that's what they did. And they said, here's what we're going to do. We're going to meet on Sundays, and we're going to worship together. We're going to get into the Word together. We're going to bless each other. We're going to fellowship together. We're going to have an amazing time on Sundays. The rest of the week, we're going to take time off. And at the end of the year, what they did was they wrote down all the ministries that they had been doing, and then they said, now, which of these ministries need to go back on the board and we need to pick them up again? And they went through that evaluating process, and they realized that sometimes we're running ourselves ragged, even in churches. Now, I don't believe that's the case with River Valley Community Church. We're trying to be careful, but we still need to evaluate all the time. Are the ministries that we've had going for many years, are they still working? Are they still where people are at? Are they necessary for us? Do we need to adjust? Do we need to make room for other things? See, in our lives, with no margin, we want to make room for other things, and so we simply squeeze something else in because we're not willing to let go of something else. Because we still want to do that. We still want to have that. And our lives become very cluttered. Dr. Swenson goes on to say, we must have some room to breathe. We need freedom to think and permission to heal. Our relationships are being starved to death by velocity, just the speed at which we're going. No one has the time to listen, let alone love. Our children lay wounded on the ground, run over by high-speed good intentions. Is God now pro-exhaustion? Doesn't he lead people beside the still waters anymore? Who plundered those wide open spaces of the past, and how can we get them back? There are no fallow lands of our emotions to lie down and rest in. We miss them more than we suspect. Doesn't he lead people beside still waters anymore? That's a great question. That's a really good question. When's the last time you've been led by God beside still waters? Also in Psalm 23, it says, he makes me lie down in green pastures. And I like that. He makes me lie down. I think sometimes God is trying to tell us, if you don't slow down and stop, I'm going to make you have a time out. It's literally to cause to make someone sit down and rest. But the beautiful thing that he does it in green pastures, where there's provision. It's a place of peace and quiet. Provision, well-being, safety, relationally satisfying. People are at peace with one another. He makes me lie down in green pastures. He restores my soul. He restores my soul. As pastors, as shepherds, it's our responsibility to have a bead on how people are doing in our congregation, especially spiritually, but also relationally. Hebrews 13:17, when I read this last week again, it really hit me, and I thought, oh boy. Hebrews 13:17 says, obey your spiritual leaders and do what they say. Let's just park there for an hour. or not. Their work is to watch over your souls, and they're accountable to God. Their work is to watch over your souls, and they're accountable to God. When I read that, that scares the living daylights out of me. That's a huge responsibility and a huge privilege. You know, the writer to the Hebrews doesn't say that their work is to watch over your left thigh or your big toe or an elbow or a shoulder. The shepherd's job isn't to watch over the ins and outs of your workplace or your cars, whatever's in your garage, or the furnace in your home. There's other people that look after those things, and ultimately we are all responsible for all of those own things that belong to us, even our own soul, and yet pastors and shepherds have the responsibility to pay attention to what's going on in that part of a person's life that lives forever. The soul never dies. Never dies. And the soul is that part of your life that is the essence of who you are. And it needs to be nurtured. And it needs to be guarded. And it needs to be encouraged. And it needs to be lifted up. And it needs to be freed up. Not overloaded, not overburdened. Scripture says in Hebrews 13:17, it continues on, give them reason to do this with joy and not with sorrow. That would certainly not be for your benefit. It's a delight to be a pastor, if that's your calling. It's a delight to be a home builder, if that's your calling. It's a delight to be anything that you are, if God's called you to that. It's a delight. And you love to be able to participate with others to see fruit come from the things that God has called you to. It's the same with us as pastors. And so sharing these things the last 2 weeks and in the next little bit as well. By the way, next Sunday, Pastor Randy will be back. He had to be away this weekend. Family matters came up out of town, so you know what? He's got the freedom to go. There's lots of us here. As a matter of fact, I'm going to say this. If there's some Sunday where all of us as pastors can't be here, this church is okay. This church is well looked after. I just love it that there are so many of you who can get up and preach and lead worship and look after one another. We three pastors are not the only game in town. There's a good group of people here who care about the souls of the people in this church. That's an amazing thing. Forget where I was again. Man, it's been one of those Sundays. Okay, let me get into this next piece of scripture here. So I'm thinking about, as pastors, that's where we were, about how important it is for us to share things with our congregation, to teach and to come alongside of and to offer wisdom and advice. If we've learned anything, it's important to pass that on, and vice versa within the congregation. That's what we do with and for each other. And as we think of our time, the things that we're including into our lives, activities, possessions, do these things add life or are they life-sucking? Do they take life out of us? One of the things that I think is a problem with marginless living is that we would like to put everything that we see that we like in life into the present, into the now. That's one of the downsides of media. We see it on TV, we hear it, we see it on social media. Oh, that person's doing that, I'd like to do that too. So I'm going to go do that too. Well, then you can't do all of this. Well, why not? Why not? I'm going to try. Or I want this product or this experience just like these other folks have had. And again, we try and keep packing it in and our calendars get filled up, and our lives are so busy. And then we begin to hit walls because we don't have margin. The writer of Ecclesiastes had some wise things to say. Ecclesiastes chapter 3, first 8 verses. We've heard these many times. For everything there is a season, a time for every activity under heaven. A time to be born and a time to die. A time to plant and a time to harvest. A time to kill and a time to heal. A time to tear down and a time to build up. A time to cry and a time to laugh. A time to grieve and a time to dance. A time to scatter stones and a time to gather stones. A time to embrace and a time to turn away. A time to search and a time to quit searching. A time to keep and a time to throw away. A time to tear and a time to mend. A time to be quiet and a time to speak. A time to love and a time to hate. A time for war and a time for peace. There's a season for everything. There's a time for everything. You know what happens when you go hunting out of season and you get caught? It doesn't go well. Big fines, jail time, firearms confiscated, vehicles that you've been hunting in, gone. There's rules and regulations to how we do life. There's rules for Mother Nature, so to speak, and we abide by it. We put on something really warm. The other day, I was driving down the street. It was one of those really bitterly cold mornings. There's a young man. I'm guessing he was walking towards Menasnet College, and it looked like he was a foreign student. And it was like minus 30 or something, and then the wind chill, minus 400 or something. I don't know what it was. He had on a jean jacket, a shirt, and it was all open. No gloves, no hat, nothing. And he's walking down the street, and I'm going, that man's a popsicle. And he's going to be a little puddle when he gets to the college. He's going to be owie. It's going to hurt. There's seasons, and so we dress for the seasons. We work within the seasons that come our way. There's one time to plant crops in this environment because of the four seasons we get. We can't plant crops all any time we want. It's got to happen with these. You get the picture. So it is in the times of our lives. And yet we try and squeeze a lot of seasons into the now because we like the idea of it. We want it now. We want to experience it now. And so we pull it into the now. And things get pushed and pushed and pushed until there's no more margin left on the page. And all it takes is for one little thing to go haywire, and everything starts to feel a little haywire, right? There's never a good time, you know? Murphy's Law. If something bad is going to happen, it's going to happen. Well, I love what Dave Ramsey, when he talks about finances, he says, having an emergency fund set aside is like having Murphy repellent. It doesn't mean that bad things don't happen, but when those bad things do happen, you've got a financial margin that now can absorb those things, and you're not stressed out. The water heater goes, oh, we have an emergency fund. I can draw money out of that and use that for that emergency and then begin to slowly build that fund up again. And so on and so forth. See, God's got timing down pretty good. Even in Galatians 4:4, New Living Translation says, when the right time came, God sent his son, born of a woman subject to the law. Jesus came into this world at the right, appointed, opportune time. Not before, not after. Not in conjunction with everything else that was going on in the world prior or after. It happened at the right time in history. He knew exactly what we needed, exactly at the right time. And so he applied the remedy for our human condition, Jesus. to come into this world at the right time. And that's something that we continually need to learn and put ourselves into the right posture and examine our schedules, look at our stuff in our homes and all of these. And those things aren't bad and progress isn't bad. All of these things are neutral. It's how we have our hearts looking at things and time and everything else. 1 Timothy 6:6 says, "But godliness with contentment is great gain." Godliness with contentment is great gain. Those things go together to have great gain. Some commentators will say that really means he's talking about wealth. Godliness and contentment is great wealth. That's a totally different look. He's not talking about our pocketbooks. He's talking about the wealth of the human, the wealth of the soul, the depth and the wealth, the well-being that a person can have in life. Godliness with contentment. Are we content with what's on our calendars? Are we content with what we drive? Are we content with our income? And are we pursuing God in the midst of all of these things? And finding that the deeper we go with Him, the other things in life are tools. They're there to be used and enjoyed, to be given and shared and received from God with thanksgiving, but they're not to consume our souls. A gentleman by the name of Lloyd Reeb had put a little article together, and I'm just going to pull one thing out of it. He's done a lot of coaching with people as they're making transitions in life. So he said, "Over the years, I've made it a practice to study the people that I've coached. I look back 10 or more years and I ask the question, who's finishing well and who's not finishing well? What made the difference?" So early in coaching relationship, I ask my clients to write down what they really want if their life turns out perfectly. So rather than this being a subjective assessment, I use their own metrics to assess how they are doing now. And I have been surprised by my learnings. First, two things that I thought would be critical factors to finishing well had little impact. I found this quite interesting. Two factors that he thought would be bigger in people's minds and actually be what people really needed to finish well, it wasn't that at all. Those two things, money and talent. Money and talent. It turns out that if you have more money or more talent, you are no more likely to finish well than if you didn't have those things in abundance. Interesting observation. What does our world focus on? What does our society focus on? Money and talent, standing, reputation. The things that he said really, really you need to hone in on, this is coming from a Christian perspective. He says, one, clarity and focus. In other words, know who you are and know what your calling is in life. That's why I came back to that this morning. What's your calling? Who are you? Who has God made you to be? Who is God shaping you to be? Encouragement and support is the second thing. Surround yourselves with sources of encouragement. Have a regular group of people that speak into your lives. One of the things that progress in our world does is it pushes relationships to the side, to the periphery. Interestingly enough, we don't have time for those relationships. So it says encouragement and support. Adaptability is the third. People who finish well become more flexible and adaptable as they grow older rather than becoming set in their ways or grumpy old men and women. Have I heard sermons at home about that? Oh, I'm just being honest. There's days when I've needed to be told a little bit, like, Larry, you know what? You're getting a little grumpy. And I need to hear that. And I'm glad that I have a wife that has freedom in our relationship to speak into my life. Because I trust her. No, I really do. She's sitting right here, so, you know, you can ask her. Adaptability. Being able to have give and take with what's going on in life. Fourthly, now this is assuming someone is more towards the middle or end of life, not end of life, but at that time where you're transitioning. Maybe retirement or maybe into another opportunity. Spouse as priority. Boy, did that one ever hit me. Spouse as priority. It's really easy when you're the primary, when you possess the primary income role. Man, I went to school. I went to Bible school and seminary as a married guy with kids. And so what did my wife do? Came along for the ride. Terry had a career. She was one of the top brain surgeons in... Surprise! She should have been. But she had a career going, but she set that over here while I went to school and pursued the ministry. And that's normal for most couples. One sets aside their opportunities in deference to the other. But there's a time in life when it's really important. Okay, I've done my thing, and it's going along. What about my spouse? In transition times, especially, be talking. Focus on each other. What I do affects my spouse. What my spouse does affects me. Big changes, we got to talk about them. I haven't always been real good at that. It's taken me years to figure that out because I was such a lone ranger growing up and as a young guy. I was a real lone ranger, and I still have those tendencies if I'm not careful. And in health and rest, pay attention to your health and get rest. Our youngest son has been reading through a book. He's a computer programmer, but he's been reading through a book about sleep. And when we've seen him on occasion, he's had that book and he's joked with me and he said, Dad, I could be a sleep pastor, you know. I could be a sleep evangelist. Did you know how important sleep is? And then he'll tell me details about these things and I'm going, that's so important. We don't hear that enough. Someone needs to preach that. Nick, you go and preach that. Let the world know. 2 Peter 1:3 says, by his divine power, God has given us everything we need for living a godly life. We have received all of this by coming to know him, the one who called us to himself by means of his marvelous glory and excellence. BJ and Roxy, can you come up and get ready to lead in the final song together this morning? God's divine power has given us everything we need for living a godly life. That includes wisdom in knowing how to look at our schedules and what to put into our homes and into our lives. Right? God's given us wisdom to live life in a godly fashion. We've received all of this by coming to know him, the one who called us to himself by means of his marvelous glory and excellence. Here's the clue for us. When God says he gives us wisdom and all of these things, he gives us also abilities to have an income, to live and to live well, to do things with our hands and our hearts and our minds. God is a creator, and he's put that within us too, to create, to make things, and to be, and to work with people, and to work with things and our imaginations, and to earn a good living, and experience the fullness that life in the here and now has to offer, but not at the cost of our soul. We have received all of this by coming to know him. That's a word of intimacy, to know him. And that's when we take time and set aside time to be with him, to know him, so that we hear his voice, like we heard this morning from Roxy, the question that God asked Bill Johnson, do you hear me? You know, that's the question God's always asking us. Do you hear me? Do you see me? Do you know me? And God so desires for us to be close to him. And what comes out of that is powerful. And it's freeing. And it's life-giving. It's not onerous and burdensome. It's life-giving. And God will give us the clues and the cues as we share these moments with him in intimacy and with others in our life groups, as we talk about these things and pray things through. I love hearing about groups of guys that get together with one another from time to time, and you guys talk about life issues. I just love hearing those stories, and some of you gals too. That's why I'm so confident in the next generation coming up. You young men and women are serious about knowing God and hearing him and moving in tandem with his Spirit. And as you get to know him together, there's nothing you can't do that he's calling you to do. But it will not suck the life out of your soul. It will add value to your soul. And that will capture the hearts of the people around you. Because again, this world desperately needs to see people who are actually well-adjusted in a crazy, crazy world. And that's you. You get to be at peace, being led beside quiet streams. You get to feed and lie down and rest in places of abundance and provision and peacefulness. And you get to invite people into that, and you get to come out of those places into a world that's full of chaos. And you get to walk in peace. And you will have an authority and a covering over your life that will begin rubbing off on other people. And that's happened. And again, I love hearing stories of how you're intersecting with people. That's why going out into the freezing temperatures in the middle of the night, you are bringing still waters and green pastures and the love and the warmth of our Savior into people's hearts and souls. Pardon me? They show it to you. We could go off on another tangent with that. But I think there are people, even in the midst of their disparity, they've learned that there are some things that are non-negotiable, and it's to share life with another person. Yeah. We've got to get back to that and walk in that. It's powerful. I'm going to invite us to stand together as we close this morning in prayer. And let's see. Gerhard and Hilma, are you guys here? Is Gerhard with you? He's here. You guys can actually do this and come on up to the front if you're okay with that and be available to pray. And Mark and Mandy, love to have you guys join us up here too. And they're just going to be available to pray. If God's been talking to you this morning, and I trust that he has, speaking to your hearts. God wants to meet you. Maybe some of you, and I've seen this on Sunday mornings increasingly too, where we dismiss and there's little groups of people often praying together. That's so heartwarming, isn't it? That the body's ministering to the body, loving on each other, listening to each other, caring for each other, praying over one another. Yeah, just feel free to do that. If you want someone to just pray with you, listen to what you've got to say, and then pray over you in faith for whatever your need might be this morning. Maybe it's for yourself, maybe it's for someone else. You just come while we're singing this song, and you come and pray.